seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Kelly for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it.
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
Hello there, golf fans. You're very welcome along to the Golf Weekly podcast. In situ today, we have Peter Lawrie. Hello.
Hello.
Fresh from Ireland's finest driving range.
Absolutely.
And Fionn Davenport is standing by. Hello.
Gents.
Fionn, good to have you with us. How goes things at the driving range, Peter? You're 2-3 weeks into it now?
We're on our third birthday tomorrow. Okay. Is our 3-week birthday. So, things are going good. It's certainly getting a bit of notice now. All the locals in the area are delighted that it's back open again. They were making the track to Stepaside or Leopardstown. Mm-hmm. But now they only have to go around the corner and drop into ourselves. So we're finding a bigger influx of people coming in, and especially midterm at the moment, so lots of kids coming in.
Weather's good as well.
Weather's good as well, yeah.
People are dusting off clubs. So where are you for the uninitiated?
We are right beside Temple Oak. Temple Oak, heading just off the M50.
Yeah.
So we couldn't be in a better location, to be honest with you. So all welcome.
Good. What are the opening hours?
We are open bright and early, 9 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday to Friday. And
9 a.m. Do you have money there turning up at the spa at 9 a.m.?
We certainly do.
Do you?
Yeah. Guys coming in for balls and coffee or tea. And then at the weekends we're open at 8 o'clock and we close at 7.
We'll keep it going. I'll be out there soon.
Good man. More than welcome.
I know Nathan was out there and I heard good things. And I saw somebody tweet you saying they thought the mats were excellent, which is a very important part of the driving range.
Oh, huge, yeah. Well, what I did was I brought in the Huxley material and we sanded it. So anybody who has injuries can get back practicing again. Because our mats, you don't get the shock that comes through the golf club off a hard surface. Mm. They're very soft to hit off. So anybody out there who has injuries and who's been told not to do a lot of practice, you can actually come to us and you'd be amazed at how soft the mats are to practice off.
Great. Super. I will be out soon. We'll record a podcast or two out there over the course of
more than welcome.
The year. So some tweets firstly. There's loads to talk about. Paul Fitzsimons says, I think it's fair to assume the folks in Golf Weekly OTP will be discussing Rory this week. It's such a pity. Shows more signs of the disconnect in his relationship with the European Tour. This is Rory McIlroy confirming he will not be playing in the Irish Open. We'll play you that audio in a few moments' time, what he was saying. Tom McPherson, this is on the whistle, Fionn. This was a big contentious issue last week.
Oh, yeah.
Fabulous job on the audio adjustment of the mindfulness whistle, he says. The new volume transports me in that moment to the fresh cut grass and dew tracks of an early morning round in summer.
Wow.
There you go. That's a hell of a job I've done on the whistle.
I was going to say, like, well above even your own expectations.
Yeah.
It was just to stop annoying Nathan, really. That was, you set the bar fairly low.
John Bailey, I know for us dodging bets in future will be known as cooch. But he says, as a talented and privileged man from young age, I suspect he still doesn't see the decency element that giving the guy a proper few dollars would mean to normal people. Like many US golfers, that's all they know. He will come on to Kuchar later on. I saw Dermot Gallese tweeted that Kuchar was given a $41,000 Mercedes for his 21st birthday.
Wow.
A very wealthy family, Matt Kuchar.
Yeah.
John Bailey listened to your panel. You and Damien McGrain and Padraig Harrington with Nathan out at the driving range in Spawell. The panel was great listening. What struck me was the camaraderie from underage years with parents driving others. No longer the done thing, I suspect, for the worst in relation to fostering competition and lasting friendships. I haven't heard the full panel yet, but Nathan did say to me that he didn't realise what good friends you were as kids.
Yeah, sure. Look, we travelled pretty much. Myself and Padraig went to a lot of events together. Either his dad drove or my dad drove, or, you know, we got there or came back with somebody. Damien the same. Kids nowadays kind of go separately, but I remember getting on the CIE bus down the back and there might be 6 or 7 of us, you know, heading off to a golf tournament.
Those days are gone.
Yeah, we'd sleep in a tent, the whole lot. So
there you go. People should check out that panel. I think we've put it up as a podcast as well in the Golf Weekly feed. We are having issues on iTunes, by the way, so I mean, this is tricky. I was going to say, if you can't find us, just go to the website, but you're not going to hear this if you haven't found us already. So spread the word, put it that way. We're just having some issues generally and off the ball with iTunes at the moment. Something to do with the new website. Ollie McCormack, lads, I'm heading to Derry in June for a week with the extended in-laws, family and family's family. Any tips and courses in the area I should be trying to check out? Hashtag friend of the pod. Ballyliffin jumped to my mind, I suppose. Irish Open last year and 40 minutes from Derry.
Yeah.
Good.
Port Stewart.
Oh, of course, yeah. Mm. Geez, actually, you're not short of options, to be honest.
You've got thousands of golf courses. Yeah.
Go and play Port Rush if you can. Are they still taking people to Portrush at the moment?
No, I think, no, well, off winter mats. And then I think from March, I think it's closed.
Okay.
That's it.
Mm. Well, he's ending in June. I mean, look, you won't be short, but Ballyliffin and Port Stewart would jump to mind.
He won't play Portrush in June. Mm. Yeah, there's loads. And then there's lots of small courses, like that whole northwestern coast, both in Northern Ireland and Donegal, is just awash with really lovely tracks to play.
It is an amazing stretch, isn't it, actually?
Rossapenna near Downings is lovely.
Two courses in Rossapenna, haven't they?
Well, yeah, they've got the old Tom Morris, the old one, which is gorgeous, and then Sandy Hills, which is one of the hardest courses I've ever played. I don't know. Have you ever played that, Peter?
No, never. No. Was Pat Ruddy designed it, did he?
Yeah.
Rossapenna?
Yeah. He did. He did Sandy Hills, yeah.
He likes a tough golf course, our Pat does.
Jesus, he really does.
European club comes to mind.
It's a masochist.
Yeah.
Lots of people got in touch, as you might imagine, on Sunday evening, with similar sentiments, which we'll have to talk about, unfortunately. Kieran O'Dea, another victory on the PGA Tour for slow play at the weekend. When are both tours going to do something about this? Brian Horgan says, a lot of people looking for the PGA Tour to do something about slow play in the wake of JB Holmes winning last night. However, it seems these people are forgetting something. JB Holmes is not a 14-year-old boy from China. Donal O'Hagan, it was tough seeing Jordan Spieth putting together a scorecard which looked remarkably like many of mine. Hashtag friend of the pod. Yeah, Spieth. An 81 on the Sunday. Mm. James Donoghue, surely Adam Scott's putting performance at Riviera on Sunday blows this theory on leaving the flag in all the time out of the water. Pressure on and he crumbled. Leaving the flag in surely only makes the hole smaller. Yeah, Scott did go to pieces on the Sunday. I don't know if you can blame the flag stick.
Yeah, I'd wager that he's got other issues. Yeah. He's a spotty putter at the best of times now, which is why he'd gone to the anchored putter for so long.
Mm. Have you been playing much of your... Do you have your thoughts on leaving the pin in?
I'm amazed that the likes of Adam Scott and others leaving the pin in from such a short distance, never mind anything else. Adam Scott is one of these guys who was always a very streaky putter.
Sure, and putting it kindly.
Yeah, and if he got something new into his head, he'd be very good for a short period of time. But when the pressure comes on, you know, anything like that just breaks up. So this kind of new idea that, I'm going to put with the flag in, you know, it'll work for a short period of time. And we saw on Sunday, it just went to haywire.
Yeah, that's very true. It's exactly what happened. Because last week he was talking about how leaving the pin in, he felt, helped him not have to worry as much about the line. He was almost able to just rifle the ball at the hole a bit more and take the break out of it. Now, obviously, if you miss your putt, you've got a nasty one coming back. But he was almost kidding himself, you felt, a little bit.
Yeah, well, look, bad putters or streaky putters, they rarely see the ball going in the same position all the time. And now with the flag in, he can kind of focus on the flag. It gives him somewhere to focus, which helped him initially. But like all fads, they quickly disappear.
And also, it was so windy on Sunday that the pin at times was against the edge of the hole.
Yeah.
It just looked messy.
Yeah.
But he persevered. He didn't putt very well anyway. Shailen Strain says, Peter Lawrie must be difficult to listen to in the WhatsApp group watching Spieth on 10. Yeah, Spieth. We'll come to Spieth.
I haven't even gone down that road yet.
You took no joy in Spieth.
I didn't take any joy from yourself or Nathan, but I wouldn't say I didn't take any joy. I told you so.
You're a bad man. Alan Milan, JB Holmes in the final group. The topic for every golf podcast in the world next week will be mind-numbing slow play. And then on Matt Kuchar, there was a rare voice sticking up for him. A.D. Woodward said, it's his business, his alone. It's not for us to be the moral guardians of the world. I think he's been cheap, but it's not for us to judge him or anyone else. To which another listener, Emma Kane, said, I'll judge him. Thanks very much. So they are your tweets. We have lots to get into this week, so we're going to do that now. So let's talk Riviera then. JB Holmes wins. He finished on 14 under par. Justin Thomas, who had a very healthy lead going into the round, finished up on 13 under. At various points in the mix, Adam Scott was knocking around. Siwoo Kim, who they spent as little time as possible on somebody who was in the top five. And Mark Leishman finished high enough up as well. McIlroy, for a time, was there. Like, the closest McIlroy came was when Thomas had a 14-footer at the 7th for par, and McIlroy had 11 feet for birdie at the 9th. And he could have moved into a shot of the lead at that stage, but then McIlroy missed his putt and Thomas made his, so he never really got closer than that. But he was in the mix for a time. Let's start with Justin Thomas firstly, because I know we're going to get into JB Holmes and the slow play. Thomas kind of cracked a little bit under pressure.
He did, yeah.
A bit bad round. Like, he shot a 75 in total. I know it was windy. But he was saying that this one's going to bother him for a very long time because he sort of gave this away.
Look, like all tournaments, you know what I mean? When you're in the mix and you don't finish it off, you know, it kind of hurts you. But I actually think he's going to come back very strongly. He loves this week coming in Mexico. I actually think he's going to do quite well and he'll forget all about last week.
Yeah. He said when he like tees it up on Thursday, it won't be in his mind. It's almost just when he's sitting on a flight, when he's sitting at home. It's going to bother him.
He kind of gave one away,
yeah. Yeah, a little bit. What did you make of it, Fionn?
Yeah, he gave one away. I mean, Tiger Woods doesn't like these greens. Lots of people, they're very bumpy. I've been reading, I've never played them, but I've heard that even though they're Poana, they can be quite bumpy. And so maybe not running as true as greens at other pros. So it might account for the fact that JT had a 4-putt and a 3-putt in two successive holes. It might account for the fact that Spieth had a horror show. It might account for the fact that like players look good and then just couldn't put the ball in the hole, Adam Scott being one of them. I kind of got bored a little bit, I think. I don't like JB Holmes that much, so I wasn't cheering for him to do well. And as soon as I saw, I think at the 14th hole, I kind of just switched away and I started, it was on in the background, but I kind of just stopped focusing, which is really a terrible indictment of someone who comes on a golf podcast to talk about golf. But I mean, and do you know what? It's funny. I know you like this course, Joe, looking, don't you? Like,
yeah, I think it's a good course, yeah.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. And part of the problem, I wonder if, is that because of the delays with rain that they had, they played so many holes on the Sunday, so, you know, it's never going to make for really, really gorgeous golf. I guess just if you were to focus on just the back and forth between Thomas and Holmes, that's not uninteresting. It was certainly quite exciting at the end, you know what I mean? But like JT had, did he have 1 4-putt and 2 3-putts?
Yeah.
Yeah, that, like, Jesus, that's grim. And for a guy as good as him, yeah. That's pretty grim.
Did playing so many holes in the final day kind of hurt the guys who are so kind of get themselves so ready to play 18 holes? You know, they've been in the gym, they've done this, they've done that. They're, you know, their kind of whole mind is 18 holes and that's all they play. While you get like the likes of JB Holmes, you know, I don't know whether he's seen a gym or not, you know, that he's able to keep on playing. Mm. You know what I mean? He probably plays a lot of golf rather than does a lot of practice. So he was able to kind of grind it out.
It ran at 36.8 was the average score in the back nine on the Sunday, which was very, very high.
Yeah, it was horrendously windy. I mean, I sometimes think when you're watching on TV,
wind is
the worst thing. It can make, you know, really good golfers look iffy, because there was a period there for about an hour where nobody was pin high with any approach shots.
Yeah.
And you can watch this and say, oh, it's terrible golf. But I had just played in wind on the Friday at Powers Court and it was horrendous. Like, really, I couldn't believe it. It was the worst wind I'd ever played in. So I always had a certain sympathy for these guys, how tough it is out there. So I wasn't as quick to dismiss it as bad golf. I think it was actually incredibly difficult for them.
Yeah, and when you get really fast greens on, you know, strong wind, you know, you struggle big time. You know?
I agree with you, Fiona. I found this tough going, because on the face of it, so you had JB Holmes, you had Justin Thomas collapsing, which is always a very dramatic thing. You know, we all rubberneck a car crash. And you had Adam Scott in the mix. I'm always interested to see how Scott's going. And you had McIlroy, like, genuinely in the mix. If McIlroy had kicked on, then he could have got seriously in contention. It's his third top five finish in 3 starts on the PGA Tour, which in the face of it isn't bad. But it was lacking in drama.
Yeah.
Because it was so slow. I honestly do think that is the reason.
It
was a 5.5-hour round. So that's 60 minutes more than the suggested pace of play on the PGA Tour for a three ball. JB Holmes is bearing the brunt of the criticism. Like, he broke the 40-second rule continuously. I mean, just routinely. There was one, I mean, if you imagine as a player, you have a one-footer. This is the one which has really irked people. Imagine having a one-footer. What we just do on a Saturday is just walk up and we don't even get in position. You just tap it in. JB Holmes took 50 seconds for one-footer at one stage. You know? And there was a point where it almost, for a while, became sort of interesting to watch how annoyed Rob Lee and Mark Rowe were getting in commentary.
Yeah.
Because with the most frustrating thing with Holmes is, okay, fair enough, he breaks the... He's slow anyway, but there were several occasions where he actually just wasn't even ready to play, where he wasn't... It wasn't his turn. And then he seemed to only start his preparations when the other player had played. Like, on the green, that happened. There was one stage where Thomas had to chip onto the green, and it was a tricky enough chip, and Thomas was taking his time.
Yeah.
And it seemed to be only then that JB Holmes actually opened up his
green
book,
and
then he started doing it. Or there was that hole where the fairway, there are two fairways, there's a creek running up the middle, and Adam Scott, I'm not even sure if it was necessarily his turn, but he just said, I'm going to go.
Done.
Because I don't think he wanted to wait for Holmes, and he just wanted to get the shot played. And again, Scott took his few minutes, or not his few minutes, but his few seconds to play the shot, and then Holmes only started his preparation then, only seemed to talk to the caddy, only seemed to open his yard book. His quote afterwards, there's times when I'm probably slow, but it is what it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
No respect.
Well, I mean, yeah, he doesn't. No, I mean, he's not alone, and he's not the biggest criminal in this regard. But, like, the hole you were talking, it was on the fourth hole where you could see, and Rob Lee was getting particularly incensed about it, but this idea that he clearly has it in his mind that his process isn't triggered until it's his time to go.
Yeah.
So he can't have a process while someone else is doing something. So whatever, like, I don't think any golfer, including JB Holmes, is deliberately going, I'm going to be really, really slow just for the fun of it. This is the process I have. However, the lack of respect that you're talking about, Peter, is evident. But I mean, it's unfortunately, as Adam Scott pointed out last week, it's not even, well, the players, we're looking at the players to self-regulate because there isn't a rule in golf, because I had a look at it afterwards. It's a suggestion. It's not even a rule that you have to play within 40 seconds. It's suggested. And unless the PGA take definitive steps, and again, Adam Scott suggested, penalize me. I'm a top player, rather than some 15-year-old Chinese kid, and then the world will sit up and take notice. But until the PGA actually make a change to the rules, JB Holmes will continue to play slowly, and dozens of others, and in the post-round interviews, will continue to say things like, look, I know I'm not trying to be slow, but hey, it is what it is.
Mm.
Because they don't care.
Are you telling me, Fionn, that the rules are different in America than they are in Europe, where if you are on the clock, you have...
Sorry. Yeah. No, you can be on the clock. You can be on the clock, and that is a rule. But it's whatever it is, I looked it up.
Yeah.
It's right. 5.8, rule 5.8, I think, or whatever. But in the actual thing, it is suggested that a player take no more than 40 seconds between beginning to end of shot. But it's a suggestion. You can take longer if you want.
Right, when they're not on the clock.
Yeah, when they're not on the clock. Okay. Then when you're on the clock, you have to. But again, the clock doesn't say... Again, this is like... It's the other issue, of course, is the reluctance in the PGA to put players on the clock. Well, referees are very, very reluctant to do so. When you put on the clock, it's up to the referee's judgment, am I not wrong in this, to decide... Like, you get one warning, then you get a second warning, and then nominally you're meant to get a penalty after that. But the issue here is about speeding up the game. Like, at one point, were they three holes behind?
Yeah.
The leaders were three holes behind. Like, that's just mental.
Well, look, I'm surprised the TV hasn't done more to this because, you know, it gives terrible TV coverage when, you know, the leaders are three holes behind the group that has finished. Like, how do you finish your telecast, you know, with with two holes to go and you've only got one group on the
No, it's true. I do think it was one of the first times I can really remember what should have been a very exciting final round, because we're talking about pretty marquee players.
Yeah.
Of course, that I like, and you know, the collapse of Thomas and Holmes coming in for a long time, who's going to win it? You know, you had all the ingredients, and it was one of the first times I thought, this is so slow.
It's boring.
It's actually boring. And it shouldn't, on paper, have been boring.
It's boring to golfers who like watching golf.
Yeah. Yes.
Now, how boring is it going to be for somebody who doesn't know anything about golf and who doesn't watch golf on a regular basis? Turn it on and go, wow, this is like watching paint dry.
I think TV might be the most effective at changing this. You know, I think if they go to the PGA Tour and say, we're not paying for this product anymore unless you speed this up, because I don't know, I notice all the time, even my attention span is dwindling.
Yeah.
It just is. We are evolving very quickly all the time in this respect. And I think on Holmes, I agree with Fionn's point. He is waiting for Justin Thomas to hit his shot before he will start his own process. Now, I presume that is because he knows himself, once he goes through his process with his caddy and then is ready to hit, he doesn't want to wait then.
Okay.
So that is why I would assume he's waiting for Peter Lowry to hit his shot. Then he'll start my process, because he knows once he finishes his process and he's decided what shot he's hitting, he can just hit straight away. Whereas he will argue to Rob Lee up in commentary, well, the reason I'm not starting my getting ready point is I don't know how long Peter Lowry's going to take, so I don't want to have agreed with my caddy what shot I'm hitting and then Lowry takes another minute and a half and I'm standing over a shot getting nervy. So I'd say that's JB Holmes's rationale. Fair enough?
It's a fair enough point, I would agree with you there, but if there was a referee sitting on them and watching this and saying, right, JB Holmes, the minute I hit my shot, JB's time has started. So, you know, the minute my ball is in the air, it's the next person's to play, and that's when their time starts. So if he can't play within those 40 seconds, he should get penalised. But it's the lunatics running the asylum here. And it's happening not across the American tour, but it's across the European tour as well. Mm. And there's nobody putting down ruling with an iron fist. And America's were the worst for it. I wasn't here for the saga of Garcia, right? To give my point there, but it's the European Tour which are weak, and America are even weaker. Mm. You know what I mean? If you're going to run the players pay, okay? It's their tour, right? And they pay people to run their tour.
They pay annual fees. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And huge amount of money. And the American commissioner, who is
Jay Monahan,
is getting substantially, you know, paid for his role. Mm. And like, stand up and be a man and start. Stop being frightened of the players.
What should have happened with Garcia, as a matter of interest, in your opinion?
Oh, he should have been given he should have been hit with a penalty of money and a suspension. And because he brought the game into disrepute. Mm. And you sign in the dotted line at the start of every year, you sign up and you say, right, I'm not going to, you know, I'm not allowed to do X, Y, and Z. And one thing is, you know, affect the tour's visibility throughout all medias. Mm. And that's what Garcia did. But if Keith Pelly had any kind of gumption in him, he would have done that. But instead of that, he goes, you're okay, Sergio. But would you play in this tournament coming up, you know, maybe? Now, I don't know whether that happened or not, but that's what it reeks to me like.
On the slow play issue, the only immediate solution I seem to have, frankly, is to let the golf start, record it, and then about 90 minutes later, I start watching it. That's kind of where I am.
Yeah.
Flick through the ads a little bit.
There is an argument to be made that TV in America is in part complicit in this.
They want the ads.
Exactly. Whereas, obviously, we're watching it on Sky, so we have the difficult viewing of watching the lads in this lonely studio out in the M25 in London somewhere, you know, trying to fill airtime with nothing but just their own chat. Whereas in the United States, and because the golf is usually split between one of the big networks and the Golf Channel, they just go to ads all the time. Mm. So the viewer isn't really aware of how painfully slow these players can be.
Yeah, that's possibly true,
And there is a sense that, whereas American TV is not going to – golf is such a niche game anyway in terms of, you know, the big five sports. that they're not going to show an entire tournament. They might show they won't even show the US Open on network television from start to finish. So what you get is you'll get packages. So they'll show whatever, they'll show bits of it. And TV doesn't seem to, I could be wrong here, but TV doesn't seem that bothered in whether it takes 5.5 hours to complete the round or whether it takes 4.5 hours to complete the round. 4.5 hours is still a hell of a long time to have to devote to any a sport that is a minority game. So therefore, you know, take your time reading the green book and we'll just cut to an ad.
Yeah, maybe. And American audiences are probably more accustomed to it because NFL is so stop-start, you know, they're used to lots of ads. Can we move off the slow play stuff because there's other stuff I want to get to and frankly,
it just is
a bit repetitive.
I thought the Greens book was banned. It was banned in Europe, is it not?
Well, sure.
JB Holmes had it out the whole time.
Yeah, he had it out the whole time.
Yeah,
he definitely did. So it mustn't be banned, or else there's a version he has which is allowed.
Okay.
Are you allowed to make your own notes?
You're allowed to make your own notes, and the green book has to be a certain. It's only allowed to go into a certain diameter.
Okay.
Of reading the greens.
Okay. Well, okay. He was reading something. Jordan Spieth.
It wasn't hurry up.
No, Jordan Spieth, final round of 81. I just had a look. So his strokes gained putting stats all week. He was behind all week, behind the field, but only marginally, like he was 0.07 per round behind. But on the Sunday, he really went to pieces. He was minus 3.6 on strokes gained putting. So he'd basically given up the guts of 4 shots in that round to the field, just on putting alone. There were some horrible moments. I mean, there were some really terrible moments. There was a 3-putt from no more than 2 feet initially, which was quite scary. Rich Beam was saying, even just pre-round, I was watching the coverage, and he was saying he thinks Spieth is fine. He's okay from outside 8 feet, maybe. He's okay. But he said, watch him close to the hole. And it was the most prescient comment. He said, I've been watching him and watch him close to the hole. Look at his head. Look how much his head is going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And almost mid-stroke, he's looking. And it was frightening in that 3-putt from 2 feet, just how all over the shop he was. Like Hank Haney said, it's the yips.
Yeah.
I mean,
he did.
Whether it's the yips or not, I don't know. But this has now flamed out into a massive problem for Spieth, Peter. This is frightening for the guy.
I don't know whether to be. Look, initially we saw Jordan, he came onto the scene, brilliant player. And I have to admit, he is a brilliant player. But it's. He is a very good player.
Who's that, sorry?
Yeah, your mate. Your mate.
Well, it's major winning Jordan Spieth, you're actually agreeing
absolutely.
He's a great player.
He is a good player, but his whole game was based around holing putts, and I said it from the start. And I said once he lost that, he'd really struggle.
How can he lose it so dramatically, do you think?
Because when you're such a good putter, you're so used to holding that. It's like I can't get an analogy right out of my head right just now, but you know, he's so used to being able to get the ball in the hole, and then all of a sudden he misses one, and it only took one putt to miss, and then doubt came in. And once doubt is in your mind, forget it. And currently, you know, with all the head movement and stuff like that, he is doubting himself from short range. And his major issue now is the greens were bumpy and it was windy. He was in serious trouble.
There was a moment where he missed from about 3 feet. And he immediately kind of pointed down at the green as if to say, oh, yeah. You know, it bobbled. And straight away in the commentary, Beam and Rob Lee said, no. Yeah. No, it didn't.
But he's trying to trick himself into believing that it wasn't his fault, it was somebody else's. And now that you can tap down spike marks, you can't say it's a spike mark anymore.
Yeah. It's actually shocking, Fionn, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And I think we said it a few weeks ago because last week, Hank Haney wasn't the first time he said Jordan Spieth has the yips. It is shocking given, like, I sometimes think last year, we spent all of last year where he was winless, but we spent all of last year saying Spieth is going to win more majors than all these other top players just because he is Jordan Spieth, because he can get the ball in the hole. And
I was the only one, Fionn, who, by the way, I have to rub my hand here. Yeah.
But you couldn't have foreseen yips.
No.
You couldn't have foreseen this.
No, I'm not saying it. All I'm saying is once he lost his putter, you know what I mean, he's back to being an average golfer.
Yeah.
And an average pro.
Now, it's an average pro. But you know, being fortune-telling in golf is a mug's game because, you know, as we know. But, like, this is a player who came on the scene as one of the hottest collegiate golfers of his generation. This is a player who set golf alight, has won three majors. He's not even, he's 25 years old. Like, it's astonishing to me to think that, okay, all of a sudden you get yippy. You can get yippy in your 30s. I mean, it happens to most golfers, but to get yippy in your early 20s just seems weird and mechanical. And, but I don't know, so I'm going to defer to Peter Laurie on this.
No, I agree. He does seem a bit young. I mean, he should be in his pomp here.
But this is the thing. Golfers now, right, take previous to this, golfers matured much later, okay? And golfers were maturing at 25, 26, 27. Now golfers seem to bloody mature at 17, you know what I mean? And be probably one of the best players at 17, 18, 19. And when they get to 25, it's like being 25 is their 35. And they've holed so many putts. They've played in so many tournaments. They've had so much pressure put on them.
Yeah.
You know, 25 now. And what will happen is Jordan will find a way to overcome this, right? And he'll go back to being a winner again.
Really? Okay.
Right?
I hope so.
And why do you say that?
Because that's just in his nature. He's very good at getting the ball in the hole, right? He's a very good chipper of the ball. But he has, for his confidence to come back into the rest of his game, he has to solve the putter.
And as a matter of interest, without seeing the specifics of what's going on with him or being able to talk to him or get inside his head, is there some old school tip or piece of advice that you give to someone in that scenario?
In his situation, a break might be very good.
Right.
You know, an absolute, let's take 6 months off.
Which is not going to happen.
Which, well, why not? You know, and this is the thing.
Because he can't risk taking 6 months off in case it doesn't work, and then the rest of his game is completely rusty as well, and the whole thing goes to pot.
But your game doesn't get rusty. Just guys who get injured who are out for a year. Look at Tiger Woods, right? He was out for nearly 3 years.
But how can you give up the chance to compete in a major?
But you have to look at the bigger picture. And guys, and I kick myself for this matter. 6 months out is not the worst thing in the world, right? They might think it at the time, you know, but golf has such longevity. Like, look at Phil Mickelson. What's he, 48?
Yeah.
Still winning tournaments. Jordan is 25. A year out is not the worst thing he can do. He's confusing himself. Like, up to this, he had a method, right? And that method worked. And he stuck by it. Everything was, he'd get to the kind of inside 3 feet or 3 feet and in. And he'd look at the hole and bang, it would go in. And he never thought about missing. Now that he's missed a few and missed quite a plenty in the last 12 months, he now has confused himself in relation to, well, what do I do? Do I look at the hole? Do I not look at the hole? Do I, you know, follow the putter head? Do I not follow the putter? Do I look at the ball? You know, it's all confusion. And that's why I'm saying I don't agree that he can't stop, right? He is mega wealthy. And if his sponsors go, you know, oh, well, if you're not on it, then we're not paying you. So what? It's only money at the end of the day. And he
it's true.
And he has plenty of it. But unfortunately, his manager, right, and the closest people beside him are not going to tell him to stop.
No.
Right?
They're not. His father on the bag this week.
Like, that's just crazy stuff.
Michael Greller's father passed away.
But Sean Spieth is going to be on the bag, So it'll be, I'd be curious to see what the dynamic is between father and son. I mean, not that you can tell anything sitting in my house in Stockport, but, you know.
Tiger Woods finished 15th, by the way, at Riviera, as we say goodbye to that. Kind of typical of his Riviera form. I often think, I wonder, are there amateurs out there? So Tiger Woods has certain courses he just doesn't play well on, and certain courses he plays great. There are probably amateurs out there who have the misfortune of not realising they are a member of a club which doesn't quite suit them. And they just assume that they're a 15, 16 handicapper. And actually, if they joined a different club which really suited them, they suddenly a bit more confidence and everything changed. They could be playing off 11 or 12. There are probably golfers all over this country trapped at a course, trapped at the Riviera. Yeah. And there's Torrey Pines just down the road and they don't even know.
No, exactly, yeah.
Look, I've often thought that.
It's horses to courses. I used to play great on a number of golf courses when I played. And I used to play terrible. I used to think to myself, why am I going here? Because I know that I'm going to do well to make the cut. Yeah. Because I struggle on that kind
so
of...
So imagine you were trapped in that course every Saturday in your local comp.
Oh, yeah, no thanks.
But you would think, you would just think, I'm a crap golfer.
Not you personally. No, okay, you might do, yeah. So all those golfers out there who are really struggling, go play a different golf course and see if you're any
good
better.
Try a few out anyway.
Can I just point you to one little telling statistic about Tiger Woods? So obviously, you know, he hasn't, you know, he's done better so far than he did last year. I mean, he barely made the cut at Torrey Pines and he missed one at Riviera. But it's this stat here. Tee to green, he finished eighth in the PGA in strokes gained tee to green at 1.33. And even though he hasn't played enough events for his statistic to qualify as a proper statistic, he's 1.66 this year. Which, where he miraculously to finish at 1.66 strokes gained tee to green, would put him second only to Dustin Johnson in last year's category. But like, so the suggestion is that with the driver, he's better again than he was last year, or he's certainly started the year better again. So despite the fact that he hasn't really electrified golf so far this season, everything points to Tiger Woods having a pretty good year. And dare I say, winning a major.
Okay.
That's just me chucking it in.
Good, good.
Yeah.
By the way, quick last point. Poana Greens. There's lots of Poana Greens in Ireland, aren't there?
I'm not hot on Poana Greens. As in, I wouldn't... If you told me that grass was their Poana and it was a difference, I'd struggle to tell you.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Unfortunately. So I apologise to all
of... I saw a Greg Allen tweet that about 80% of the greens in Ireland are Poana.
Really?
Yeah. Ah.
Okay.
There you go.
So, I mean, I've been you know, sitting in my living room watching these Poana greens thinking, God, I'd love to...
Have a go.
So exotic. Greens. I wonder what they're like. I'm probably putting on them every week. Poana's just like mixed grass, isn't it? That's effectively the issue. And then one of the reasons they're bumpy is the different strains of grass can grow at different speeds. That's kind of the gist, isn't it?
Very much so, yeah. So Wentworth would have been struggling like that, very much so, where the different, when they get soft on top of them as well, you get heel marks and then you get different growth heights.
Yeah, there you go. So let's talk about Rory McIlroy next. On Rory McIlroy's, before we get to his comments here with the BBC, just on his Riviera play, like his putting was good on the Sunday. He held lots of good putts.
Yeah.
He was 0.84 strokes gained, so he's almost picking up a shot in the field. I thought he held some brilliant putts. I know he missed one or two. He's always going to miss one or two. But it was less grim than some Sunday nights I've seen him putting.
Bad putters putt well on bad greens.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Why?
Okay, how could you put it? Because they're probably less concerned about not holding putts because they're watching everybody else miss.
The psychology is less crucifying.
Exactly, yeah. They're not watching somebody hole putt after putt after putt after putt.
And they just feel a bit better.
And they feel a bit better with themselves. Like there's a more of a level playing field.
Interesting. So here's McIlroy speaking to Stephen Watson of the BBC. As you'll hear towards the end here, he explains his reasons for not playing the Irish Open and why the major he wants to win this year, Peter, is not the Masters.
Everyone will talk up this year and every year about me trying to win the Masters, but if I could pick one tournament to win this year, it would be Portrush. I would definitely leave Augusta on the back burner and say, if I could win at Portrush, win the Open Championship, lift the claret jug there, that would be... I'm trying not to think about it because I think I would get overexcited, but it's fantastic. I mean, I think the work that, you know, the country has done to bring the Open back to Portrush for the first time in 60 odd years, it's a great achievement. 70 odd years maybe. It's a great achievement, and it's testament to how great Northern Irish golf has been over the past few years. You know, GMAC, Clarkie, myself. It's in a really good place. I'm excited for it. I don't really want to think about it because, again, it would be like the Augusta scenario all over again, where why the tournament that I desperately want to win, why would I make that even harder for myself? So I'm going to, again, prepare for it the way I always would. You know, I'll be nostalgic. I'll think about watching my dad around there in the north of Ireland. I'll think about me playing the north of Ireland there, all the great rounds I've played just casually with mates. But at the end of the day, I'm there to try and win the Open Championship, and I'll try to treat it just like any other event.
And without putting more pressure on you, would that be the biggest thing you could think you could do in your career, to win a major at home in Northern Ireland?
100%. I never thought I'd play a major at home in Northern Ireland. So yeah, I think it would be the biggest achievement of my career if I were able to do that.
The stuff dreams are made of.
No, yeah, exactly.
No Irish Open for you this year. Why have you decided not to go?
So again, like, I think I view, if there's ever a year where I feel like I can miss the Irish Open, it's this year. It's a perfect storm. It's the Open's at Portrush. If I were to play the Irish Open, the Open Championship would be my third event in a row. And for me personally, that's not the best way to prepare for what could be the biggest event of my life. So I want to give myself the best chance to win the Open Championship. And that's not discrediting, and that's not belittling the Irish Open in any way, but if I want to give myself the best possible chance to win the Open Championship, I want to play the week before to get tuned up on a links course, and then I want to go straight into the Open. That third week is just a little too much for me. And like, I love the Irish Open. I've supported it my whole career, but if there's any year to miss the Irish Open, it is this one. And I just hope people will understand, because I'm not doing it for any other reason than I think it gives me the best chance to win the Open Championship.
But not turning your back on the European Tour, you'll still obviously try and support that as best you can.
Yeah, I'll still support it, of course. I mean, I want to play Ryder Cups, and playing Ryder Cups means you got to be a member of the European Tour. So my main focus of golf is the major championships, WGCs, the biggest events in the world, wherever they may be that given week. But yeah, I mean, to play Ryder Cup, I wouldn't miss that for the world. So, I'm still going to be a member of the tour. I'm just going to sort of play as little as I can to save myself for the golf that I'm playing everywhere else.
There you are, Rory McIlroy speaking to the BBC. Fiona, I'm not going to slate him for his logic on missing out in the Irish Open, I have to say.
No, I 100% think he's doing the right thing. 100%. Like, and also as well, as I feel sorry almost, and it's not often that I'm 100% sympathetic to Rory McIlroy, but I really do feel a huge amount of sympathy that when he's asked a very obvious question, and clearly he knew the question was coming, that it was like he had a pained tone when answering the question about playing or not, and sought to reassure us that no, I'm not turning my back on the Irish Open. I've supported it my whole life. More to the point, he supported it with his name and foundation for the last, 4 years. But the idea that he still has a question to answer on this, I find, I won't say sad, because it's not sad, but it's like one of those where you're like, ugh, it makes me throw my eyes up to the air. I think he's dead right. He is 100% right to do what he's doing. I mean, he hasn't taken up his European Tour membership. So, like, when he says things like, oh, I'm going to support the European Tour, it's like, you might take it up in May. I'm assuming he'll take up his membership. But he hasn't done it yet. Mm. And but no, I mean, the broader issue is this. If he was to play the Irish Open, that would mean he'd go into the Open Championship having played three tournaments in a row, and he would be knackered. And yeah. I have no problems with it at all. I really don't understand anyone who does.
Thoughts?
I kind of drove in here and thinking to myself, how do I answer this question? Because I knew it would be coming up, Rory not playing, because it was announced this morning. And my very initial thought was, that's a bit of a shocker. And then you look at it and you say, right, and I've played in many Irish Opens, and Rory picked the Irish Open up off the ground and did tremendous work to get it to where it is today. So if we're ever going to give anybody a free pass of missing a tournament, because I think he's going to be the only top Irish player not to have played an Irish Open. Now, I could be totally wrong there, but I think going back, especially when I played it, every Irish player played the Irish Open. So if we're going to give him a pass, this is the year to give him a pass, right? Because he's done so much work for it. it'll be disappointing for the fans who will struggle to get a ticket for the British Open, but they'll, you know, there was plenty of Irish Open tickets, and Lahinch will be a wonderful venue. And it's disappointing for Paul McGinley, who's now put his name to the Irish
Open. Yeah, I'd say quite a quiet McGinley house this morning, I would say.
Exactly. And look, he'll be probably quite an, I wouldn't say he'll be annoyed, but he'll be disappointed.
Yeah, he'll be a bit miffed.
Yeah, and I think a lot of Irish fans are going to be very disappointed. The Irish Open's promoters are going to be disappointed. Dubai Duty Free will be very disappointed, I would think. But if we're ever to give Rory a pass, this is the year to say, get out of jail free.
And let me ask you this as a professional then. Is 3 weeks on the bends too much to play your best stuff in week three?
I don't think so. But I would question the tour, the European tour again. And I know I'm beating on about them today a little bit. But for how strong the Irish Open is, I would have, and especially with the British Open being in Portrush, I would have loved to have seen the tour just change the Scottish Open to the Irish Open week and the Irish Open.
As a one-off almost.
As a one-off.
Yeah. There's a lot of sponsorship money in that Scottish Open. Big backers behind that one.
There's huge backers behind it, but...
And they're going to have the same issue then. You know, like Mickelson always plays the Scottish Open, Ricky Fowler does, they have some big names. And equally, Mickelson and Fowler are not going to spend 3 weeks on this side of the world.
No, but they've made the mistake of where they're having it, in the Renaissance Club, I think it is, isn't it, in Scotland. It's not a Lynx at all.
Yeah, it's a fair point.
You know, and they said they were going to create this Lynx-type swing. Mm. And then they're thrown in a big money tournament. Again, money talks.
Yeah.
Where it doesn't benefit the players coming across to play Lynx, to play Irish Open Lynx.
That's true. I wonder, could they have, even if the Scottish was unbudgeable, I wonder might they have put the Irish Open the week after the Open? McIlroy could have turned up and said, right,
I'm tired, but I'm here.
That might have been another option as well. because look, when you have a chance of getting McIlroy at a tournament, you know, he makes any tournament.
Of course he does. He's the Tiger Woods.
Yeah, he is. There's an argument you should have maybe looked at putting it the week after. I'm not sure what's after the Open. The Canadian Open's always on afterwards, isn't it?
Normally it quite...
Isn't it Hilton Head? Not Hilton Head.
Germany. No, Sweden used to be after the Irish Open, wasn't it?
Right. I mean after the Open Championship.
After the Open Championship.
If you were to put the Irish Open in the week after, what's usually...
Sweden.
Is it Sweden? Mm. All right, well then, sod, you can push that anywhere.
Don't tell the Swedes that. Look, as I said to you, it's disappointing.
Yeah, I know it is. It is. There's no doubt. Okay, so that's McIlroy. We'll have to see how all that plays out. I don't think anyone's going to slate him when they hear his logic, you know. Although it is interesting he's trying to kid himself that the Masters is not his biggest tournament. I understand the logic, and he's saying it's the only time I may play an Open in Northern Ireland. But when you've got a tournament that will put you into the Grand Slam Club, that's still your biggest tournament. I wonder if he's trying to kid himself to take a bit of pressure off himself at Augusta.
Well, no, I think you'd have to have a heart of stone where you have a Northern Irish journalist working for the BBC asking you about the Open Championship being played in Northern Ireland, where you're from, and him not answering, yeah, it would be the biggest win of my life. Like, you couldn't say, like, that's a no-brainer, surely.
Yeah, maybe. Ah, look, I guess it's massive. If he does win it in Northern Ireland, it would be iconic beyond belief. But, I'm putting the Masters in the back burner this year. No, you're not.
No, of course not.
Grand Slam. WGC in Mexico. So they're 8,000 feet above sea level. The field here is better than it was last year. Like, last year, McIlroy missed this tournament, as did Tiger Woods and a few others. It was taken away from Doral and Miami. Justin Thomas is the favourite, so last Sunday's wobble isn't ruling him out in anybody's eyes. Justin Thomas, the favourite, 9-1. Rory McIlroy, second favourite, along with Dustin Johnson. John Rahm, about 14-1. DeChambeau, 16-1. Fowler is there, 16-1. Koepka, 18-1. Tiger Woods is 20s. Phil Mickelson, defending champion, 25-1. Worst bet of the week, Jordan Spieth, 30-1. 300-1, more like at the moment.
What's Kuchar?
Kuchar is 25s, I think.
He can't get into the country.
He's 35s. Yeah, Kuchar. I don't want to talk too much about Kuchar.
Banned.
It's interesting. So the players were all talking about trying to get their yardages right. Like, Danny Willett was hitting his 6-iron about 240 yards.
Crazy.
8,000 feet above sea level. Woods made an interesting point. He said in terms of trying to shape the ball, there's actually not enough resistance in the air to keep the ball in the air long enough. And he was saying it's quite difficult to shape the ball, which was not something I thought about. You've played at altitude, I presume. Have you been 8,000 feet above sea level, that kind of territory?
We were close to it in Switzerland.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what's it like? It must be fun hitting the ball a million miles.
Oh, it is, yeah. But it's when you get it to a, say, 6-iron, 7-iron distance, and you get the ball airborne at all, it fucking never comes down. And you have to be very careful of that. Like, you'd probably hit 3 wood further than your driver in those conditions because you get the ball up so high and there's no resistance up there.
Okay.
So this week I would be very much betting on guys who like heat. Tiger is one. He won't suffer from any muscular problems this week because he'll be nice and loose. And also I would look at guys who can control their distances very well. So Bryson maybe might be he'll have his head wrecked with.
He's playing with Tiger Woods, by the way.
Well, there you go. So that should be a cracking three ball.
I like Paul Casey.
You're about the only one who likes Paul Casey, I have to admit. Yeah.
Hits the ball dead straight.
Sorry, not in this tournament. I was meaning as in general.
Wow, is Casey not that popular now?
I'll say no more.
Okay, wow.
Yeah, I think Casey's not a bad bet this week. Hits the ball dead long, dead straight, can put, chip. Controls his yardages,
There's some good groups. So Justin Thomas, Justin Johnson, Phil Mickelson, all in a group. Shane Lowry's playing this week. Keep an eye out for him. Rory is with Bubba Watson and Brooks Koepka. Woods with DeChambeau, as we mentioned. So, by the way, on the whole, you know, Woods with his stiff back will like the heat. I totally get the logic. It was interesting. I was listening to Freddie Couples talk about 2 or 3 years ago. And someone was saying to him, I presume with your back, you must really like the heat and you must like, you know, it must loosen you up and make it easier for you. And he's like, no, I want the coldest, most miserable conditions. Because he said, my back is bad no matter what, so I might as well have everybody else a bit sore and stiff as well. So winter where everyone's feeling a bit, Freddie Couples is like, Grant, we're all in the same boat now. The heat didn't seem to warm up his back at all. I don't know if it makes any difference for Woods.
No.
But look, it's a good tournament, actually. I enjoyed it last year. Mickelson won. It was quite exciting. Justin Thomas was close to him, so that's why Thomas is up there. Have you seen Mickelson's calves?
No. They're unbelievable. He's got the calves of an MMA fighter.
It's insane. Mickelson from the arse down looks like a physical god.
Yeah.
Because they can wear their shorts now in the pro-ams.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I haven't seen them in the shorts.
Go home and Google Phil Mickelson's calves.
Yeah, they're unbelievable.
Won't regret it. They're unbelievable.
Yeah,
honestly,
they are.
It's extraordinary.
Hold on. Here we go.
Well, you can do that. Honestly, Fionn, I'm not exaggerating.
I agree. You're dead right. No, I saw them as well. And I was like, I mean, I thought, ooh, interesting.
Very interesting.
Interesting.
Matt Kuchar then. This week I made comments that were out of touch and insensitive, making a bad situation worse. They made it seem like I was marginalising David Ortiz and his financial situation, which was not my intention. I read them again and cringed. This is not who I am. He's not that kind of player. This is not who I am. It's not what I represent. I haven't lived up to those values or expectations. I let David down. I let David down. I plan to call David, something that's long overdue, apologise for the situation, and I made sure he's received the full total he has requested. So even in this PR gap, where on the face of it, it looks like this statement is building up to something good, he has still given the most miserly amount possible to try and make this go away. He didn't give him 100 grand. He gave him just the 50, not a cent more. So look, Matt Kuchar.
He also, obviously this is a statement by PR firm, so it's not his, you know, that's exactly who he is, by the way. And until he decided that it was worth the heartache or it wasn't worth the heartache, that was awaiting him, is just pay the man the money and just move on. But like, I liked in the statement where he goes, I plan to call him tonight. So you made the statement if you plan to call him, it's hilarious, but the tone he's going to take, he's going to be like more Tucker Carlson talking to your man, Rutger Bregman. Did you see that?
Yeah, it's good.
It is pretty good. But like, it, like in between gritted teeth, here, take your damn money. Thanks a lot. Go away.
Yeah. Why didn't he say, here's 150 or here's 200 grand? Just to really say, I'm such a doofus.
Because
he's still given the most miserly amount he can to try and placate everybody. There's still nothing above and beyond here. There's no genuine generosity. He has literally said to his PR people, what's the minimum I can give him that gets me out of this? And they've said, well, look, the minimum is what he's asking for, which is 50. If you want to hit him with a goodwill gesture and say, really, I've seen the light here. I really have been a bit miserly, and my statement the other week really was terrible. Do you know what? Here's 100 grand. That might have at least bought him, and I know bought is unfortunately the word here, that might have bought him some goodwill, whereas actually I now actually have less goodwill for Kuchar than I even had when this whole thing started.
Yeah. Look, when you look from the outside in, and I've been on the inside and I've looked out, you know, he went down and played in a tournament, right? He did a deal with his caddy, right, who was there, right, and they shook on it, and that was the deal. Okay,
I just want to interrupt. They had no deal for the eventuality of him winning. They had a deal for him top 10, and that was 4 grand.
Right.
They never actually discussed what would happen if he won.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, then that negates my point then.
Okay.
Because I thought they had a deal of 3 grand, 4 grand, 5 grand.
No, they didn't. So Kuchar, when he won, turned around and said, oh my God, I've won 1.3 million. And he turned to Ortiz and he said, I know we never talked about what had happened if I won the 1.3 million. Do you know what? Here's 5.
Oh, yeah.
That's why it's just so horrible.
Yeah, that's just shocking.
I'm feeling good. Here, have 5. Yeah. Go on, have 5.
Yeah, that's shocking. Here, I have it in my wallet right now. Oh, here, there man. You go.
But he did. He gave it to him in cash in an envelope.
Wow.
Like, it wasn't a check. Yeah. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to write you here. Give me your bank details. And because it's 2019, I'll transfer the money. He goes... He put the notes in an envelope and went, cheers, thanks. Yeah. The tone of the thing, whatever, it's meant to, oh, I'm not this guy. But you get the feeling that Kuchar and Kuchar's people feel this is a shakedown by Ortiz. And so Ortiz publicly shamed him, or he got help. I think he got advice off some friend of his who said, look, you got to go public with this. And so he wrote the email and said, look, this is what I want. I want 50 grand. I think that's the remuneration that I feel I'm entitled to. It's not the full 10% of what you won, but it would be enough for me. And like, you get the feel that Kuchar's people went, look, just give him the money. It'll make this problem go away, but not a penny more.
Yeah.
So it's not, as you said, Joe, it's not like I've seen the error of my ways. It's like this guy has successfully shaken me down for the money. Yeah. And that's the impression you get. And so I'm with you, Joe, as last week I made a slightly impassioned defense of Kuchar because like I'm very kind of uncomfortable with the idea of trial by Twitter, you know, where all of a sudden social media decides hang him, you know, and you're like, all right. But this week, having read that statement, you're absolutely right. He comes across as even more mealy-mouthed than he did last week.
As I've always said, to play golf, you have to be incredibly clever or incredibly stupid. And obviously, Matt Kuchar falls into the latter.
Well, certainly in this instance, he came across very... Yeah.
He always struck me as clever. That's what's so shocking. Ewan Murray had a succinct line in The Guardian. What combines Garcia, Kuchar and JB Holmes is the inevitable public sense that golfers in the upper echelon are out of touch with reality, that they believe they can do as they please without fear of serious penalty. Garcia's petulance, Holmes's ignoring of what helps grow the game, and Kuchar's thrifty touch, despite outrageous wealth, sit uneasily with the public at large.
That's right.
Golf 2019, Peter.
Here, here.
Steve Stricker, we should mention finally, as expected, he's Ryder Cup captain. I love Steve Stricker.
So do I. Yeah.
Great.
Only fella to have never won a major to be captain of the Ryder Cup.
Is that right?
Yeah.
On the American team.
He's the only player as well to win the PGA Tour Comeback of the Year award twice.
Yeah.
He's had his travails. He's had to go out and grind it. He's a very emotional man, Steve Stricker. You know, you see him in interviews, he breaks down all the time.
I saw the interview yesterday and he broke down twice.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
He breaks down all the time. There's an interview from a couple of years ago where he's just having a very banal conversation and someone says, you know, finally, you know, what are your ambitions? What's your aim out there? And he was trying to say, to make my family proud. But by the time he got the word family out, he was just in tears. Floods. It was very touching. Really like it. I love how he plays the game as well. You know, I love the simplicity of his game. Yeah. I think it takes real mental strength to go out and play the game so simply and slightly different to so many people. You know, his swing is unusual.
His way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting, this quote, and I guess you can relate to this. So Stricker won his first two PGA Tour events in 1996. And then he says, in 97, I saw this in the Irish Examiner. He was paired with Tiger Woods for the first time in the Pebble Beach Pro-Am in 97. And he said, several times I really connected with my drive, but was stunned to see Tiger's ball 50 yards ahead of me. After the first round ended, I told Nikki, my wife and caddy, what I had been thinking since the moment we left the course. I can't compete with that type of game. I just can't compete with that. He said, my round with Tiger made me introspective and for the first time I began to doubt myself. It seems to have a big effect on him. He didn't win his next win until 2001. Mm. That actually Tiger just made him go, oh crap, I don't belong here almost, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you notice, I don't know if you guys had the same reaction as me, because when I watched the press conference, I had to do a quick double take. Because he's one of those sportsmen that you don't recognize as quickly without the baseball hat. Mm. Like at first I was like, oh, that's what Steve Stricker looks like without the baseball cap. It's a bit years and years ago, maybe in the early 90s, I was in the airport in Paris and I ran into Jim Courier and we were waiting for a flight and we ended up and he kind of said, oh, you know, he asked me a question and we got talking and it took like 40 seconds. For me to realize that it was Jim Courier. And I made a point. I was like, geez, I didn't even. And he goes, and he said to me, he just goes, the way I'm not recognized, whereas others like kind of people in the media, they'll put on a hat or sunglasses. I take the hat off and nobody recognizes who I am. I had the same thought with Steve Stricker. I was like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah. So you say you like him, Peter. And it's fair to say there's many golfers you don't like.
Well.
So. Have you met him? Do you know him well?
No, don't know. No, just watch like the way him over he carries the years. Himself. Yeah, carries him over the years. Yeah, you know, really carries himself well. Plays the game the way I would have seen it played,
which is
just very simply. You know, you get up there, you hit your shot, you move on, hit the next shot. Mm. He's an exceptionally good putter, and very simple, very humble man. There's nothing flamboyant about him in any which way.
No, he's not an attention seeker, is he?
No. No, and you know, I would have kind of, I'm not saying I would have based my career around the likes of Steve Stricker, but I would have saw myself, and maybe I was totally mistaken, but that's the way I would have saw myself.
Okay. So is it, role model's too strong a word, but like when you're doubting yourself, it's good to have those points of reference.
Exactly, yeah.
Talk to us about his swing for a second. So, I mean, am I exaggerating when I say he effectively just tries not to break his wrists at all? He just turns his body and then turns his body back. Is that kind of what he's doing or is it more complex?
No, I think he swings it very simply. So he puts two turns on it, you know, and gets it out there. But he put hours and hours of practice, you know, to keep that recurring. Like we saw videos and pictures of him practicing in a little shelter at home,
yeah,
you know, in the middle of the snow.
Is he a good swing for amateurs to imitate?
I hate the word when amateurs imitate something. I would always like amateurs to swing the club that's more natural to them. Mm-hmm. Like you said at the start, I'm going to be like Steve Stricker and not break my wrists.
That was a confidential discussion.
But I'm very much on the thing of, you know, it's all about down at the ball, right? It's where you return the club to. Mm-hmm. Like you can swing it. There's so many different ways to type a swing. Like I could put you the swing of Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, Jim Furyk, Eamon Darcy. You know, there's kind of two on the right and two on the left, and they all swing the club differently, but they all had wonderful careers because they all returned the club to the ball the same way.
But I suppose where I'm coming from is that clearly I can't imitate Rory McIlroy's swing or Tiger Woods' swing or Adam Scott's swing, whereas I feel what Steve Stricker is doing, which is incredibly quiet hands, mm-hmm. in so much as I can tell. Far from an expert, I'm a hacker. Yeah. But that seems more attainable than whatever the hell McIlroy's doing, which is just gifted levels. Whereas Stricker looks to me someone that, okay, well, you know, if I'm going to simplify my game here, then mm-hmm. I'm just going to say, I'm going to keep my hands very quiet in this swing. I'm just going to turn and turn.
Yeah.
And that's what he's doing effectively.
That's exactly what he's doing. But there's... He would have more hand action than you probably realise when you slow it down. And like your game, you might need, wherever you get the club head, you might need to use your hands a little bit more in certain areas.
Okay.
I don't think anybody's swing can be repeated by somebody else to the same way.
Yeah.
But you could have kind of a picture in your head, all right, of how to swing it.
Do amateurs have too much or too little going on with their hands in your general sense?
Far too much.
Well, then, so we could come over to the Stricker side a little bit,
you
maybe.
You could do, yeah.
Great. So I'm right.
But the whole teaching now is, and I've watched it quite a bit lately, is it's all about swing speed. And you get guys now on the ranges, you know, swinging these speed sticks to speed themselves up a bit.
Yeah.
The whole game has changed. Like, you couldn't teach somebody to swing the club quickly if they swung it like Steve Stricker.
No, I appreciate that.
You can't do it.
But if you're looking for consistency, which I think amateurs are, you know, we've all had horrible days going left and right and left and right.
Yeah, but a lot of amateurs want to hit it out there. You know what I mean? Especially the younger generation.
No, I get that.
They don't care about keeping it on the range, let's put it this way. Mm. They just want to smash it out there.
And go and find it and smash it again.
Exactly.
I hate that type of golf.
Well, that's the way it's played now.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Fionn, any thoughts?
I wish I could hit it any old. No. I like the, I've tried that not breaking my wrist, but you always break your wrist a little bit, whether you realize it or not. But
your wrists are already slightly cocked. I just had a dress.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, so you're kind of,
but I'm saying,
like, the
anymore.
Idea taking it back like that. My only, I said it a few weeks ago, but I've slowed down my swing, and all I care about is just, I want to see the club go through the ball. That's one swing thought that I have. It's worth pointing out that one of the changes that Stricker has announced is that all four captain's picks are going to be made on the same day, rather than that staggered effect that was for the last Ryder Cup, because, I mean, clearly with the logic of, oh, we're going to wait to see who the hottest player is and then make a determination. But no, he said that he's going to pick all four on the one day. So because it's a weird dynamic. Like, if you're the last guy picked when 11 of the players have already been chosen and you're the last guy, it's like coming very, very late to a party that's been in full swing.
Yeah.
And so it obviously didn't work, and early doors, but it's being played at Whistling Straits, so you got to figure this is a big bash of course that the Americans, surely early doors would be fairly good favourites at, I think.
Well, Harrington argues that it's quite linksy as well, so that will favour European
players. He's gone for two picks, hasn't he, Porrick?
Has he? Why would you do that?
He's reduced his picks.
Why?
Because he feels that once you you earn your way onto it.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Wow.
I'm nearly sure he's going to go for the two picks rather than
I would have thought, give yourself as much flexibility, because you might need certain pairings, and if push comes to shove, you can just pick the four next fellas who are in the standings, and then people will see the logic, you know? Why limit yourself?
Exactly.
I'm not 100% sure, but I think might be wrong.
Have you just given... Is this breaking news?
No, I don't think so, no.
Has he told you this privately and now you've just muttered it out here?
No.
Wait and you see the headline of this golf podcast. Harrington... Two picks.
No.
Two picks, Porrick.
No, that can be a little reward for anyone who's stayed to the very end.
To be honest with you, we never once spoke about the Ryder Cup in the twice I've met him now in the last couple of weeks. Not once.
That's because when you meet, you're gossiping about lads.
No,
Did you hear about so-and-so?
He was up giving his brother a lesson recently and we never spoke about it.
Did he give Tiger a lesson?
No, Cullum, his eldest brother.
Right, okay.
Are his brothers any good?
Well, Tiger's a teacher.
Another range. No, Cullum is his eldest brother, who would have been very friendly with my brother, and Cullum plays off three and is superb.
God.
So, Jesus.
It's still, though, I mean, when you're Patrick Harrington's brother, you're no good. I don't care if you're off three and superb. You know, you're a nobody in that list.
No, he's good.
Is he?
Is Harrington, because he's such a gentleman in every... Certainly, his entire public persona is built around being interesting and a gentleman. Does he like talking a bit of trash when he's having friendly games, like having a bit of, you know, just a bit of a mess and like getting into people's? Because I've played with a couple of players who are very, very funny when playing with their friends and are kind of not like their personas that you get to know, but and not in a bad way, I mean.
Ah, no, Porrick could always have a bit of crack with you, absolutely. And if you're playing for a few quid, there'd be a bit of bustling going on. So, like everybody normally out there.
I remember once I played with one pro who and his brother, who was a very, very, very good golfer, but not a pro. And you know the way on a link sometimes where you walk back to hit the ball, like you walk back to the tee.
Yeah.
So the brother had left his bag in the middle of the fairway to pick it up on his way back. And on the tee box, he goes, oh, I see you left. you left your bag in the safest spot in the course. And I remember thinking at the time, it was such, and it was such a tried and tested line, but it really got into my mate's head and it really annoyed him. And he tried to hit it too hard and, of course, flashed it out to the right.
It happens.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, we are done.
Okay.
Fionn, thanks a million. Peter,
continue
success with Spawell. And are you, is it called Spawell or is it called the Peter Laurie?
No. I purposely called it the Spawell Golf Academy. Nobody would know where Peter Laurie Golf Academy is.
That's a good point. Everyone knows the Spawell.
Everybody knows the Spawell.
Okay. The Peter Laurie Spawell Golf Academy.
No, Spawell Golf Academy.
Okay. We're done. See you next week.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All my exes wear Rolexes, but I reside right here in